This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 380, brought to you by C2E2, Valiant Comics, Archer and Armstrong number zero, and iFanboy listeners just like you. Podcast episode 380. My name's Paul Montgomery, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
And Mr. Pat Loika.
Hello.
Connor's off on a vision quest, and so we decided to get one of our favorite people in comics and just in general, Mr. Pat Loika, one of the most enthusiastic people around, and bring some new energy to the show. So
thanks for having me.
Because what I've been doing hasn't been working, so. that's the memo I got.
Well, it's
but
you're
there
not
were
really,
graphs.
You're not really bringing energy.
There was a pie chart and a line graph, and that's just what I want to say. All right, so at ifanboy.com, we like ladies, but at ifanboy.com, we like comic books, and we read comics, and every week, you rascal, read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best books and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this year podcast, along with various other topics of interest, you scallywag. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books, so if you're worried about spoilers, run away now. Run away.
Run.
And this week, Josh had the pick.
I did. It was a different little week. I thought this was like the leftovers week, and not in a bad way. And I went with Indestructible Hulk number. I don't like the word indestructible, by the way. I find that to be an unpleasant modifier. Indestructible Hulk number 6, and it was because Walt Simonson did the art, and it was about Thor, and they were in Jotunheim, and it was the old Thor costume, and it was everything I want, and that's all. End of review. No, what's funny is I kind of heard about this a little while ago, but I'd forgotten about it. So I opened it up, and I looked at the cover, and I was like, who drew that? Walt Simonson. And so you start going through this this little Hulk story, and then before you know it, they've transported us over to one of the Nine Realms. And we're off to go, and then Thor shows up, and every page what do you call it when you're not flipping pages anymore? Pat, you would know this. Pat, page transition?
With every page turn?
Yeah, that okay, I guess that still works in the digital age.
It still does.
All right. With every page turn, I was just getting a little more into it, and I was getting myself more excited because this is some really wonderful Walter Simonson art. You know, even though it has a definite throwback feel, it looks, you know, aside from the sort of modern coloring, which isn't too egregious, it looks and feels like an old classic Walt Simonson Thor story from, you know, and to a lot of people, myself included, he's the Thor artist. He's the guy. And also he's a heck of a Hulk artist too.
Oh yeah.
He's definitely got that down. You know, but on the other side of it, I don't want to take anything away from Mark Waid. And I feel like him and Simonson have sort of a kinship in that they both, you know, they made a big name for themselves in an earlier era in comics. Not exactly the same for both of them. Wade came along later, but then they were sort of they were off for a while in the woods. In Wade's case, you know, he went and did he worked at Boom for a little while, and he kind of wasn't doing any of the mainstream titles, which is totally fine. But when he came back, you know, he came back to Marvel with Daredevil and just, you know, totally blew everybody away with that. And here he's taking a different approach on Hulk because it all fits within the framework of what we know as the Marvel universe, because the guy is nothing if not sort of an expert on these universes, both of them. I mean, he could trivia anybody under the table for Marvel and DC, I'm pretty sure.
Certainly, yeah.
He could Superman, he's out of control, but with this other stuff, it's pretty good too.
Mm.
And as you know, what we've got here is a Hulk that's a different take on Hulk, which is that now Banner's like, oh, I'm not going to be the sad sack, I'm not going to run away, I'm not going to be ashamed, I'm going to recognize the fact that I'm, you know, the smartest or you know, among the smartest men in the Marvel universe. He doesn't call it that because he has no idea. And he makes a deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. And then the Hulk becomes this sort of thing in the background, which is this deployable nuclear weapon, or I think they compared it to a targeted hurricane or something like that. And that's when the Hulk shows up. He doesn't talk. We don't spend a lot of time, you know, dealing with Hulk's feelings, and we don't, you know, Hulk doesn't say a lot. It's just, when the time is right, Hulk comes and he smashes things, and you know, so far it's been all hunky dory. And the fun part for me of this was that Wade has this great imagination where he can take the things that already exist and spin it a little bit. So the idea is that they're going to travel to one of the nine realms because they have a little piece of Uru, which is the stuff that Thor's hammer is made of. And they're going to go there and they're going to get some of these mystical elements to bring back with them and you know, do tests on and stuff. And it's just, it's this little tiny thing about the way that the Marvel Universe works that nobody's done. And of course, when they get there, there's all sorts of trouble, and the Thor there is a different Thor. So I think they went through time also.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah,
Thor doesn't know them, and it's the old school retro look as Banner describes it. And I don't know. I think, you know, all this is funneling into the fact that, as with Daredevil, Wade is bringing the fun back. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have a super angsty, you know, Hulk story. Even though there is, you know, there is a bit of melodrama that's always going to be pivotal to Bruce Banner's story. And I like the whole conceit of this series that Banner has something to prove. Surrounded by all these other great scientists in the Marvel community, he's the one that really has something to prove. He's created more problems. I would actually like to see sort of like a buddy journey, like a road story with Banner and Hank Pym, because those are the two that have caused the most problems more than innovating. But even Pym has helped out, and there's Pym particles and everything. With Banner, it's mostly, oh no, there's Bruce. What a sad story. He's that guy at the party.
Nobody piss him off.
Nobody piss him off and everything like that. And so while I do think Simonson's take on Banner was a little bit off, it's a little bit like it's like Simonson doing a David Finch character. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just grimacing the whole time. But I do love his Hulk, even with the crazy Beetleborgs armor. and
the armor's dumb.
The armor is a little ridiculous.
I mean, I know there's a purpose, but I don't care.
Yeah, but seeing Thor throwing the hammer in that old costume, seeing Thor laughing, that's fantastic. So as much as I love what Jason Aaron's doing with Thor and what Izhad Ribic is doing with Thor right now, there are different ways to depict that same character. And Simonson for me will always be like the quintessential Thor, and maybe quintessential superhero stuff. Simonson's Thor is like the perfect little, that's like my beach superhero, you know, my desert island superhero story. So the big brick. To see Frost Giants and Jotunheim, I mean, this is my bread and butter. So I love this book. I had a lot of fun with it.
Pat, are you a Hulk man or a Thor man?
I like both, actually. I got both of them here. Actually, one of the things I noticed that about this book, one of the things I love about it is this is such a small detail, but Chris Iliopoulos' lettering kind of reminds me of John Workman's lettering. And John,
but totally.
I think I didn't notice it at first. I mean, you're absolutely right, but I think I didn't notice it because it fits so well with the art.
Yeah,
like it was
exactly.
Just there, I just, oh yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like, and you can see it in the special effects and also in the lettering. So it's a nice touch.
Yeah, it is a really nice touch, and I was flipping through, and like at first I wasn't sure if I was reading an older book because you know you see the older appearance of you know Thor's older look. And you see Frost Giants, you think you're reading, you know, something from the Thor omnibus, you know, that Simonson did. But you know, it's a modern story. Mark Waid really does a good job, you know, kind of telling us, you know, giving us the lay of the land, so we're not lost. So anyone who's picking this up, you know, cold because they just like, you know, want Simonson's work, will not feel lost while they're reading this book.
I felt that too.
Yeah, and of course the layouts and the action sequences are just insane, and for someone who's been around a long time, it feels like a young man is drawing this book.
Yes.
Yeah.
And writing it, it's like the same thing. These guys don't feel like a couple guys who've been around forever who can just coast. Like they're going, oh yeah, look at this.
Yeah.
And as I keep doing, you sort of just flip through it from the beginning to the end, and you watch the energy of the pages ramp up as the action starts, as they start fighting the giants, and then he brings it down again to that quiet moment when the Hulk pulls himself up through the ground, and then all of a sudden everything just kind of explodes up to that last page where you're like,
oh my
hell
god,
yeah. It's a Marvel stoke in a big way.
You talk about energy, and you talk about layouts too. If you look at the first page and the closing page, Hulk is like bursting out of the page. He's literally like coming out of the panel and into the gutters. And that first page, he's doing sort of like a cannonball into the desert, and it's just this fantastic like kinetic energy to it that he's barely being. It's almost like a pop up book, you know, in 2D. It's so cool.
This is a straight up line. When you watch those, the first thing I notice when I'm looking through it is him breaking those panel borders, and it's like a straight line from Kirby. As Kirby did this, and then Simonson, I feel, to be very much in the vein of Kirby, with a sort of different feel to it, but he does it better than anybody. You know, they always say don't break panel borders until you're ready to break panel borders with an artist. And he just does it so well. And it's actually pretty subtle, but it's a thing that I really like in the craft of it.
Mm-hmm. Very effective.
Very well. Now, Paul, I assume you're still reading Action Comics.
Actually, I'm back reading Action Comics.
Okay. Came back.
I fell off of a little bit because it was just getting a little bit too convoluted for me. And I was very excited for Andy Diggle coming on, and I think Andy Diggle was too. So there's something a little bit bittersweet about this in that he's doing this issue and maybe the next two, and then it goes over to Tony Daniel, the artist, because the news that everyone heard is Andy Diggle has left before it even started. And that's really unfortunate because I liked his take on Superman. I like his take on Clark and Lois and Lex Luthor too. Has a great scene in here, and also I don't know how Tony Daniel is going to handle the writing of this, and also Scott Lobdell is going to be coming in as well to do some writing. We just heard
nothing
but,
you're saying is feels good to me.
Right, it's as I said, it's really bittersweet, more toward the bitter end. But if you just take this issue, I think this would be a really exciting place to start. There's a great flirtation between Clark and Lois that you know that I think we all miss from the New 52 since that stopped being a thing. And they're talking about you know scoops and stuff, and it's the same old thing. And part of that is a little bit nostalgia on my part, and. You know, I feel kind of like a heel saying, you know, I don't want to see this new direction where Clark and Lois aren't together because normally I'd be like, it's change, it's different, it's something good that's positive, that they're trying something new. But I think we've seen that something new maybe isn't very appealing. So to have a little taste of that, I mean, what new, you know, Superman or Action Comics writer coming in, who could resist writing a scene where the two of them together have this great pattern and have this great dynamic? So
you could also look at that as the challenge, though, because it's been done so often, it's kind of a gimme.
Yeah. And I mean, but then again, I might be weak or soft in that I don't mind if I've seen it over and over again, and it's just comfort food for me. But then it's a great sinister Lex Luthor that reminds me a bit of the Paul Cornell Lex Luthor from his great Action Comics run, where he's got this therapist who's, you find out, is actually in a cell, is imprisoned, and he comes to her every day and is trying to convince her that he's sane, not a sociopath. But even though she's, you know, under lock and key, she's saying, no, you're a huge sociopath. You're really dangerous. And he's like, well, we're going to try again tomorrow, see what you have to say. And so I thought that was a really funny dynamic. And it's, there's some, Lex Luthor has planted some kind of hybrid virus into Superman, some kind of weapon that is within Superman's blood or something. And his hand does strange things at the end. I like the art a lot in this. It's not, I mean... Traditionally, I mean, normally, I don't like the sort of Jim Lee approach to Superman. But on the scale of, you know, David Finch, Jim Lee in the middle, and then Tony Daniels on the far side, I like more of the Tony Daniel approach than the grimacing, you know, frowning David. I'm being very mean to David Finch on this episode.
Not everyone's a fan.
Yeah,
but
I think
a lot of people are.
Yeah, and I thought this is. Much better than what he was doing on Detective when he was doing that.
Yeah, I have to agree.
I think it doesn't feel like super grim and gritty and crazy gothic like he was doing with the Batman mythos. And that's appropriate that it's, you know, because this is not Gotham, this is Metropolis. So I was pleasantly surprised with this. I like the art. I like the story so far, but I don't know what's going to happen. So I don't know if I should recommend this or if it's a wait and see kind of thing.
I think it's a wait and see kind of thing. That's what I hear you're saying.
Yeah. I guess it's a wait and see kind of thing.
Or just not at all.
Yeah,
you're just kind of worried about where it's going to go after Dickel leaves, you know. He did such a good job, you know, laying down the groundwork for the run here. I don't know if I can continue without him, you know.
There's that, and then there's also whatever the reason was that Andy Diggle left. You know, we hear all these rumors about mm-hmm. why the writers left, and that the same thing over at the Green Lantern books. You know, mm-hmm. why did those guys leave? Mm-hmm. And some of the things we're hearing, you know, like, okay, so he left, so that means the thing that made him leave is still maybe going to happen. And if it's something that bad that it actually made him, you know, quit, do I want to read that? So that's
subjective.
Yeah, I don't know, but... I will be reading and I'm interested to see where this goes, but I've got my, you know, my hand is at the ripcord ready to eject.
You better impress me, you son of a, you better do it. It feels like All New X-Men comes out every 2 days.
Yes, it does. If it's not All New X-Men, it's Uncanny X-Men.
And this is actually, I meant to mention this when we were talking about Hulk, is that one of the things about Hulk is that it seems to actually be on a monthly schedule, whereas, you know, half the other Marvel now books come out three times a week. And so it feels like Hulk is the forgotten stepchild, and the same thing with you know, the Captain America and
Avengers Arena is like monthly too.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's some that are, you know, regular pace. And it makes them feel like they're moving at a glacial.
Yes, exactly. But it also makes them feel a little bit special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but in that same thing, I tend to not want an overload. But I will admit that I'm really enjoying All New X-Men, and I enjoyed this one as much as I had the ones before it. Pat, this has got to be your bread and butter. This has got to be
this is one of my favorite books right now, and I love how, you know, how Brian and pretty much all the creative team, just they're just making this whole thing work. This you know, the time displaced X-Men in the present day. You know, for a while when I first heard about it, I was skeptical because I wasn't sure how are you going to make this work and how are you going to, you know, pull this off. But now it's become just as fun to see how they'd react now that they know all this stuff that's going to happen to them, and it's just as fun to see see them react to their counterparts today. And that last page was that was a real tease right there.
Yeah, it's something you can only really do in comics, right? Because you have an off panel word balloon saying I'll come with you. So it's the fact that the Uncanny X-Men have come into the Jean Grey school, right? Mm-hmm. And they're asking anyone to join them because they're going to be the militant mutant mm-hmm. group. Their argument is that they're the real Xavier school. They're going to call themselves that. And for Scott to say that, the audacity, because he's the guy who killed Charles Xavier, whether he intended to or not. Pat, what you're saying about, the skepticism going in, I had that too. And I was wondering, it seems very much like a gimmick, but this is a really great example. And I felt this reading this issue that they're totally following through on the promise, which we're so unused to in comics. Like, it's just like that premise that the original X-Men are going to come forward to today and talk to the modern X-Men. Like, you might get one or two beats of that paying off in a normal book, but here, every week there's something new and interesting, and they're playing all the different angles, all of the different relationships, and he's asking smart questions, and there's a bit of meta commentary in there too, about what's changed and what crazy things have gone on since those days of the original X-Men. And that's really satisfying to see. And it's the great art, it doesn't matter what week, what day, what month, the art is always good in this book. And this is imminent on this one, right?
Yes, that's
and
right.
It's coming to the point that it's like they're blending together.
They are.
It's so cohesive. Mm-hmm. And that cliffhanger, the idea that you have a word balloon from off panel and you don't hear it. So if it was a TV show or a movie, you'd have heard the character.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that is a thing that we used to see a lot and now we never see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a complaint. So who do you think? What's your bet?
I would say it's either Jean Grey or the Beast.
It's got to be Jean Grey.
It makes a lot of sense to me.
I mean, that would be the most obvious answer, though.
Yeah,
I think
red herring. Thank you.
I think the red herrings would be Jean and maybe Bobby, because he's the one who's unhappy.
I thought it was Angel who was unhappy. She got his head tinkered with.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm mixing the two up. Yeah. Angel would be the red herring. So I don't know.
I think it's got to be Jean, because that's the one that's going to have the most
impact.
In terms of, because of Scott and all the stuff. And I guess they really played off his stupid mask, and it makes him look other.
I'm kind of into that. I mean, it doesn't make any kind of logical sense,
but
none at all. But
when I first saw it, I thought this is the stupidest thing ever. But when I read it now, I'm like, it kind of works.
The other thing I noticed with this, and just since we're not, overly praising this, I'm not wholly into the new Beast design, and because even though the point is that he's supposed to be the next evolution, and he's not supposed to look human, like, that takes away from a lot of the expression. And I'm thinking, like, what would this have looked like in one of his other forms, and could it be more expressive? And with this, it's just kind of like the no pupils, like, scary ape thing. He looks just like a monster, like a random monster they'd be fighting.
It just seems like a weird way to fix a problem by doing it again.
Right. So
Go back. I don't care how you do it. Explain it away. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, to see him in a talking head issue like this, mm-hmm. it's really kind of tricky, because he just looks angry all the time and monstrous. And maybe that's part of the point, but I don't know. So Thanos Rising number one. I was very excited for this because love Thanos. I know you love Thanos, Pat. You had the gauntlet recently. You collected Infinity Gems. You got the
I built my own gauntlet.
Not full on cosplay.
It doesn't unfortunately work.
But okay, yeah. So at least as far as we know, at least what you're telling.
No. There's no such thing. It's a display piece.
And then with the creative team of Jason Aaron and not Ysad Ribic, but Simone Bianchi, which I thought might be the same kind of flavor. There's a bit of that.
This is
very
actually a project that he's really well suited for. Because I have not typically enjoyed his stuff in the past.
Bianchi? Yeah.
Yeah, but it definitely...
I feel like he's a great cover artist and done some really interesting things with like Wolverine covers. So what did you think about this, Pat?
I really enjoyed it. It's a retelling of Thanos' origin story, basically.
This is a story that's existed before?
They told it, but they never told it in full. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's in bits and pieces, much like this is similar to I don't know if you guys remember the Ed Brubaker Pablo Raimondi Books of Doom, which kind of retold the Doctor Doom origin, you know, in chronological order. This kind of does that, but they give you more details that you never saw before, like that scene where his birth scene, that was something that was never mentioned before, for example, which was kind of screwed up. I thought it did a good job kind of making the character very sympathetic and making his home life, his family life very, very screwed up and kind of, in a way, kind of relatable for people too. And, the ending, where, that little cave expedition that they go through, it just made his story kind of a bit more tragic because now, what people thought of him after that and before that, it kind of affected how he grew up, Mm-hmm.
A couple things. I don't know for me if Thanos benefits from a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer kind of origin story. Maybe because of we've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. And maybe it sort of goes to that, the fact that he's an artist and he likes drawing the iguanas before he eventually kills all the iguanas. I'm just going to call them iguanas because that's what I don't know what they are, but and I don't know if that's part of the story, like they're called something, but anyways, but they're iguanas. And he was drawing them, and so I was like, okay, so we're going for sort of like a jilted, Hitler thing here, where he's a young guy and he goes through this weird thing and he's not accepted, and so genocide. Which is how we know Thanos is, just being horrible. I don't know if I want to feel sympathy for Thanos. I kind of just like him being, because this is a character who is in love with death, the avatar of death, and so I kind of like the broadness of his character, that he's kind of just one dimensional and just evil.
I actually agree with you. I was a little off put by the fact, like, I didn't want to see he got they kick sand in his face, so that's why he becomes the biggest killer in the history of the universe. I like the fact that he's a big thing. In the Infinity Gauntlet, he just was, and I know that there was a background, that was all set, but I like the idea that he was, some of the things in the Marvel Universe that I've always liked, and I like it in Marvel more than DC, is that there are these, gods doesn't even cover it, it's like bigger than God, they're titans, they're, larger than...
Well, he is the Mad Titan.
Yeah, they're just larger than everything, and it's just a thing that is, and I'm wary of breaking it down to, I had to kill some lizards.
Right. You know what I find more interesting is at the end of Infinity Gauntlet, after he's lost all his power and he's just hanging out in that swamp sort of planet. It's been a while since I've read it.
But he has his little farm.
But he's he's in rags and stuff. And I found that kind of interesting. Like, who is that character after? What is Hitler like after, if he hadn't shot himself or Hellboy killed him or whatever happened in the Mignola-verse, I forget. So that kind of thing. So I'm going to check out the next issue just to see where it goes. But I don't know. Maybe it's just in the concept that this book couldn't have won me over just because I don't want that sympathetic view of bobblehead teen Thanos. He's very odd looking.
He is.
He's got a big old head.
Didn't want to have, Wolverine origin told.
Yeah.
And I was in that camp. I was like, it's much more interesting to just not have it explained.
To have that
everybody
mystery.
Everybody wants it explained. But I hate it. Every time somebody calls him James, I'm like, stop it.
Like Jean did that last X-Men issue.
She wouldn't say that because she wouldn't know. I guess, or he didn't know that then. I don't know. I don't know that stuff. I want to forget that it happened.
Now about concepts that I think are totally winning and totally perfect. Godzilla Half Century War #5. Is this just me, or did anybody else read this?
No, I read it. I thought that it was over. Because I feel like either I missed an issue or it'd been a long time. So I was like, oh, there's one more of these.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a sad thing with Stoko, but that, yeah. That's the other thing is that it's a wonderful surprise when it does come up and like, oh man, there's more. It's like a Christmas morning and the old man pulls out the Red Ryder BB gun from behind the tree. There is another present. So that's Godzilla Half Century War number 5. And this is James Stoko doing his James Stoko thing with Godzilla. This is the most ingenious Godzilla concept ever, possibly, where it's basically each of these issues follow a dude who's been tracking and trying to murder Godzilla for his whole entire life. And in the end, it's a fight where this dude is in Mechagodzilla fighting Godzilla, and they've already destroyed a bunch of monsters. Who's in here? King Ghidorah, Gigan's in there, I believe. And so they're all blown up. It all looks fantastic because it's Stoko. But then you have this one dude in the pilot seat, and he's facing down Godzilla, and he's screaming, "Look at me, you damn monster!" And Godzilla isn't making eye contact because this dude's an ant. And all he wants is for Godzilla to notice him and notice any of his efforts, mm-hmm. because all he's been doing basically is throwing pebbles into a pond. And that's just, I don't know, it's an extremely Japanese idea and a great metaphor. And it's got everything you could possibly want as a Godzilla fan. And I love Godzilla, and none of the other Godzilla books that have been coming out lately come anywhere close to this in terms of just how great a concept it is, how wonderfully rendered each of these monsters are. It's the best. And it's Stoko. So that's my spiel.
I feel like I can't speak to it to that sort of degree. I don't know anything about Gojira. But it was pretty good. I got a little lost at the end. I was like, wait, I see. Although I got the concept.
You can't kill Godzilla. No, that's the moral of the story.
The more I think about it, the more it makes sense to me. But at first I was like, that's kind of weird. But it's sort of supposed to be. You can't be Godzilla. I get that. And I think knowing that going in, that helps. But he sent himself into a black hole. That sucks.
Yeah, there's like this whole Event Horizon machine. It's awesome. It shoots like a spirit bomb at the monsters. And oh, it's wonderful.
That spread with that actually happening is amazing. Gosh.
It is. Yeah.
It's one of those things that only Stoko could do that.
I was trying to, and it's not even just the Event Horizon and the monsters. It's like, look at all the clouds and the rubble and the mountains and everything. It's amazing. And I was actually trying to fit this onto my scanner to, make a best panel of the week. And I was just like, no, I can't do this any justice. So I used another page, but anyways.
All right, this episode is brought to you by C2E2, which is the premier Comic-Con in Chicago, which is coming right up. April 26th to 28th in Chicago at the West Building of McCormick Place. Comics guests includes Brian Azzarello, Kieran Gillen, Rick Remender, Paul Cornell, Amanda Connor, Andy Diggle, Chris Burnham, Brian Wood, Jim McCann, John Layman, Mike Norton, Tony Moore, and lots of others, with the biggest artist alley and Eddie convention that there is, they say. So, and if the comic guests aren't enough for you, there's tons of stars from the entertainment world as well, like Adam West, Brian Posehn, who actually is also a comics guest now, Julie Newmar, all sorts of people from the Walking Dead cast, and wrestlers like Diamond Dallas Page and Jake the Snake Roberts, who had snakes on his pants. I remember both of them. wrestlers don't get old. It's weird. I don't know what.
They do.
You gotta razor a bone. You gotta watch the documentaries. I mean, Jake the Snake Roberts in particular.
But. Yeah, it's true. In my mind, they don't get old. How's
Trey's
that?
A lovely man.
This is Julie Newmar. Anyway, don't get left out. Buy your tickets in advance and save a 3-day pass. It's only $55 if you pre-order, or $65 at the show. But buying in advance is the only way to guarantee you'll get entry to the show. Go to C2E2.com to order your tickets and all the information about the show. And again, that's April 26th to 28th in Chicago at the West Building at the McCormick Place, C2E2. There will be some of our ranks there. Pat, are you going to that one?
I will be there, yes.
Oh, there you go.
Represent.
Have fun.
I knew a kid in kindergarten who had a Jake the Snake Roberts action figure and, of course, the snake accessory, and he could put it through one nostril and make it come out the other.
Oh, okay.
Brought it all down there. Paul, your favorite series is closing in on us.
Lock and Key Omega number 4?
Yeah,
Lock and Key Omega number 4. The shit's getting pear-shaped. This story
to mate foreign and domestic colloquialisms.
It's getting pear shaped. Actually, the book sort of, I mean, it ends on like, so there's a beat to the cliffhanger at the end, but it's just like all of these things happening all at once. It's just sort of like we need more issues. I need more. But this is fantastic. This has Bodhi, who has Dodge's mind in him, so it's the little kid running around with a complete mass murderer's mind and spirit inside his body, is going around with the shadow crown and taking shadows and turning them into real corporeal things that can wreak havoc on the world. There's some great horror movie tropes going on in this. Like a bunch of the kids are having a prom in the cave where a lot of this stuff all went down back in the day when they found the matter that they forged to turn into these keys, and where all this magic comes from is this gateway into another dimension. So they had a prom there, and it's sort of like the alternative prom, and things went really bad. Some of our favorite characters might have died in this issue. We don't know. And Gabriel Rodriguez continually, nobody's doing layouts and pages this meticulous. Like, the compositions are just perfect. There's, without feeling too rigid and feeling, you know, like too overworked, it's just every page has, it's like a Where's Waldo book where you can just find these wonderful details throughout, and it's just a treat. And how many more of these? Three. In three issues, it's all over. And I don't know. I might quit comics after this because it's I might be done.
You want to know my great shame?
What's your great shame?
I have hardcovers 1, 2, and 4, and I just keep not getting 3, so I'm sort of stuck.
Have you read any of it?
No, I've read 1 and 2.
Okay,
but
yeah.
I feel like it was such a long time ago. It was like another life.
It probably was, but, you know.
I don't believe we ever. I can't think of the last time we talked about an Avatar comic on here, but I guess here in Gillen, yeah, it is Avatar, right? Uber number 0?
It is Avatar, and it is Uber number 0. And this is one that I recommended on Light Week, and because I was very curious about this, to see Kieran Gillen doing some creator-owned stuff aside from Phonogram, and to do something with superheroes that is like sort of like balls out, you know, totally crazy, which is what you can do at Avatar. Unfortunately, I think that all of his work and great research into World War II is somewhat lost in the muddy art. This is, you know, it's Avatar, it's kind of serviceable art, and unfortunately, like all the blood and gore, it gets really muddy and just ugly to look at. And one of the things I thought was interesting in the afterword that Gillen wrote, he didn't really want to. He was pitched this to do this story about metahumans, superhumans at the very end of World War II. The idea is that the Nazis are going to make these superhumans to help win the war in 1945 when it's all but lost. And he wasn't interested in it, but then he's like, I'll take a look at it and try it, and tried something. And he said, I hope that you find this compelling and fascinating. I hope you don't enjoy it. It's not supposed to glorify, it's not supposed to be yay, Nazi zombies, yay. It's supposed to be kind of a tough read and hard to chew.
I had a hard time with that as a concept.
I can see where he's coming from, though. The idea is it's not supposed to be mass entertainment. It's supposed to be kind of difficult and challenging, and that's a little bit tough to do with a superhero story. You don't really see those. There, any kind of superhero story, even when they're purporting to be really serious and change the game, there's always some, you know, fan favorite moments and you know, gratuitous fun. And with this, it's just it's really the art that's bothering me. I wish I could see this with a different artist and see how I would, because there's some interesting ideas in here, but I don't know if I can stomach, you know, more of this.
Pat, yeah. you added snapshot number 3 to the rundown.
Yes.
What's your take on it?
It's a great showcase for Jock's art. You know, it's good to see him drawing, you know, sequential stories again, you know, just seeing him do action scenes. And I dig the plot. It's, you know, it's kind of a mystery. You know, there's someone got framed for murder, and then there's, you know, and now, you know, he there's this whole chase going on throughout the entire series, and this is just a continuation of that. There's more, a lot of stuff gets revealed as the book goes on. But really, the best part of it is the action sequence, like halfway through, that involves involves a car chase, shootouts, and all that fun stuff.
If he draws car chases and stuff, cars going off of ramps, bridges, ledges, what have you, I'm cool with that. And then fist fight in the rain.
Exactly.
So that's sort of his bread and butter. This was the best looking issue of the whole thing. The plot I can kind of either take or leave, but I actually really like that it's in black and white. I think Connor had said at one point, we were talking about one of the earlier issues, that it felt kind of like it wasn't finished, but it's neat to see the sort of rawness of the art. And I'm sure he does a lot of it digitally, but it doesn't really look that way. It looks pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Josh, did you want to talk about Deadpool?
Yeah. What a surprise that was.
Oh yeah.
After we finished up the sort of initial arc, which was the Dead President's arc, I didn't know what to expect. I thought that Mike Hawthorne was coming on, but I guess that's not till later. What we had here was this wonderful little flashbacky episode of if Deadpool had been, this comic had existed in the mid 80s.
I think that the term should be throwback, because you got the dot pitch too,
and when the color slightly leaves the lines.
And when they do that intentionally, it's kind
of
cool.
Well, if you remember, a couple of years ago, we made Aphrodisiac, the book of the year. They sort of did that, and I fell in love with it there. And I actually was like, did Jim Rugg draw this? And it wasn't Jim Rugg. It was Scott Koblish, who's done retro styles on other things as well.
Yeah.
The opening scene in this, it's just a staff meeting at the Daily Bugle, and Peter Parker is trying to pitch, this really important story, and no one's paying any attention to him. And at the end, he's basically just saying, "I am Spider-Man. I am him. I am Spider-Man. Pay attention to me." And it's fantastic writing. I thought it was hilarious.
It's actually, I really liked Deedpool in this too, because there's times where I've there's definitely times I've had enough of him. But in this sort of wacky concept, and I don't want to read it all the time. Mm-hmm. But a little bit here and there, it was really fun, and it was like almost like a what the issue, if anybody remembers those going way back. It was just like they can really poke fun at stuff, and Tony Stark is drunken mess sitting around in his iron briefs.
So the idea is that Deadpool is tasked by an agent of the devil or of Mephisto to knock Tony Stark off the wagon. And it plays into that the most famous Tony Stark cover ever, where he's staring into the mirror and he's got the helmet off and he's just haggard. The definition, haggard, demon in a bottle. And it's Deadpool looking through the other side. It's made one of it was the best cover of the week. It's wrong on many levels. It's immature. It's kind of misguided, but it's really funny when you get down to it.
Yeah, it was a really fun issue, and he gets drunk and takes the Iron Man armor out and paints it like his own costume. Yeah.
I love the idea that Peter Parker doesn't stop another robbery, and then he's like, oh no, does this mean is Uncle Ben gonna get shot again?
Yes, that battle.
That was fantastic.
And let's not forget the liquor ad starring Angar the Screamer.
Oh God, yeah, it was. This might. It's weird. It might be my pick of the week.
This was almost pick of the week. I want that to be known. I decided. It was almost a coin flip. So it was a hell of a lot of fun. I think I had more to say about the other one. So there you go. That's all the books that we're going to talk about. We also like to talk about what other folks were reading and what they thought about it. So Paul, do you want to run down the top five pick of the weeks that the iFanboy community.
Absolutely. The top five picks of the week. Number five, Deadpool. Number seven, 8.3%. Four, Indestructible Hulk. Number six at 8.3%. So it was a tie there. Three, Glory. Number 34, the end of that series, 9.0. Two, Lock and Key Omega. Number four, nice, 22.7%. Like seeing that. Number one, can't go wrong with All New X-Men. Number 10 with 23.3%.
That is a great spread.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Truly.
And so let's check out a couple of user reviews really quick. Muddy 9900 said of Green Arrow number 19, and I think he got these numbers mixed up, so I fixed them. just according to context.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. Stepping over
the line there.
It might be. But it wouldn't have made any sense if I'd read them the other way around. You gave the story a 2 out of 5, and you gave the art a 5 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was 0.5%. There's a page halfway through this issue when Komodo falls and pulls Ollie with him. It's basically everything that is right and wrong with superhero storytelling in one sequence. It's a brilliantly crafted page, and I kept going back to it and stared at it for 10 minutes when I first viewed it. It's a grand, fantastic, elegant, filled with filled with expository narrative boxes that add nothing and talk down to the reader by explaining everything that is happening right now, like that friend who fancies himself a cinephile because he sat through The Seven Samurai once and decided to talk over Die Hard on movie night because the rest of aren't as knowledgeable to the medium to get it. It's obnoxious, distracting, and downright ugly. It is the case throughout the issue. The narrative boxes throw off pacing and really bring down the brilliant stuff Sorrentino is doing. And to be fair, I saw Seven Samurai twice. So
I actually did that with Shrek. Actually, people complained that I was doing this running commentary on Shrek, and like we don't want to be in, we're not in film school. That's you. So that was years ago. But
that's
yeah,
my wife every night.
So I thought this was actually, I mean, I agree with some of these complaints, but I thought this was the best issue so far of this.
Oh yeah.
In terms of the action, in terms of the storytelling of the art, I thought it was really. And like using color for emphasis. I agree, though, that there's some really talk downy kind of exposition. And I was like, get that out of here. Just get rid of that.
That's what's happening now.
Like do a silent issue with you know, Sorrentino. Like I think he's really good. And I think he would be great.
I think that he has stepped up the coloring also.
Yeah,
I agree.
From the first issue.
And
yeah,
that
definitely.
First issue was off. And this one is. A lot of things going on.
This is the right balance. I mean, that like a lot of the detail stuff, like the zoom in on the arrows as they're coming towards each other, and just the way he draws, like drawing a bowstring.
Yeah,
it's like he could do a manual on. He could work at an archery place.
Did you ever see there was a
I don't know why he would want that job. But.
Who was the artist? He was drawing Green Arrow, and he got like a letter from some archery person. They posted this up, and it was just like,
oh,
this whole thing.
I remember
about how
hearing
he was
about
drawing
this.
It line. How he's drawing
Brett
it wrong.
Booth, I think.
It was Brett Booth. Yeah. And it's this whole thing about the guy's like, well, typically in archery, the guy's arm is so-and-so in the string. And he just wrote back. It was like paragraphs and paragraphs. Brett Booth just writes, go fuck yourself. That's all. I don't want to hear it. And I kind of see where he's coming from. But since I read that, every time I read one of the Archer books, I'm like, is this right? Is that good? Is that all right? This is like the bastard stepchild of Jock and David Aja at the same time. It's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I don't mean that as a bad thing, but it's those things.
It's a great way to describe it. Yeah. It really is.
Like, I can see heavy elements of both of those guys. And it's getting better, but there's definitely impressive pages here.
Yeah.
It's all right.
All right, so we got another review from The Aging Young Rebel for Polarity number 1 from Boom Studios. Story 4 out of 5, art 4 out of 5, POW 0.2%. Sometimes my favorite books are the ones I expect to be terrible, but surprise me with an unexpected level of quality. A little wordy in places, not that that's a bad thing, but witty and heartfelt with fitting and enjoyable art. I've never seen George Colo before, but he reminds me of Peter Panzerfaust's Tyler Jenkins mixed with Jeff Lemire. And although it's not 100% consistent, it usually hits a high standard. Max Bemis's writing, although not perfect, is good. And at one point, one of his trademark rants made me laugh out loud. He also manages to create a cast of characters that are very believable and relatable very quickly. This is a really interesting idea. This is about a guy who goes off his meds. He finds that he's bipolar and he goes off his meds, and because that they make you numb. And we've seen that, you know, in a lot of different media. But he finds out that the pills, while also suppressing his bipolar, his erratic tendencies, they also suppress superpowers. So, and I've seen this compared to Luther Strode in terms of violence, and I think that's right on. And it's really interesting. It's a very interesting book. I think it's going to be a 4-issue miniseries. And Max Bemis is the guy, frontman for Say Anything. A lot of rock stars writing comics these days.
They're not always bad.
Not always bad.
I've never heard of that band. I don't know what that means. But I had never heard of My Chemical Romance either. When Gerard.
Well, you're very old. I mean,
it's totally true. Have you?
I mean, in terms of perspective, you're really old.
Yeah, no, like, I
you wear glasses.
Yeah. Have either of you heard of Say Anything?
I have. I couldn't give
like,
you
they,
lyrics.
Like, is it a popular? Like, would you hear it on the radio?
They've been around for a bit. I think he's a couple months older than I am. Oh.
So he just like recently out of high school.
So old, rocking chair old. This episode is also brought to you by Archer and Armstrong number 0, arriving on May 8th from the New York Times bestselling creative team, Fred Van Lente and Clayton Henry. Those Claytons, so good. It's the 100% true story of the Epic of Gilgamesh featuring Armstrong and the Eternal Warrior. Love that idea. Start reading here with a special standalone issue of the series Boing Boing Calls Fantabulous. Get a sneak preview in the Valiant Harbinger Wars Free Comic Book Day special in stores everywhere this Free Comic Book Day, if you would believe it. I love the Epic of Gilgamesh. I have an audio of that.
All I think of, and I know you're with me, Pat, is the dude from the Avengers.
Yeah.
I hear Gilgamesh. It's the first thing I think of, and that will be the case until the day I die, which, according to Paul, not long.
And it could be any day. You okay? Just checking in on. You were quiet. I was worried.
Broken. Minor stroke. Oof. Okay, we're going to move on to the audience questions this week. And Henrik from Sweden writes in and asks, with all the talk of Hellraiser being canceled, I have been thinking long and hard about comics ending, either due to low sales or for some other reason. I think some comics, even though I love them, were meant to end, like Preacher, Why the Last Man, and Scalped, while I would have liked to see many other comics continue for years after their cancellation. What comics do you miss the most and would like to have seen continue, like Alias, his example, and what comics should have ended years ago, his examples, Powers and Fables?
I miss Gotham Central. I don't think that was a natural conclusion. I think that was quite an unnatural, supernatural conclusion to that series.
It was a precursor to everything that would happen.
Right. So I think, you know, but then also if DC Comics put out a press release on Monday for new Gotham Central issues, I would be terrified. I would throw my laptop out the window. Yeah, exactly. That's why.
It would be Constantine number one. Is what it would be. It would be the same thing.
So yeah.
Pat, where are you at on this? You have to have some.
He already mentioned Gotham Central, which I really liked. I would have liked to have seen more of Northlanders. That was one of my favorite Vertigo books. I thought, you know, Brian Wood could have done so much more with that. You know, with that setting. I think he's. It was just such a good book, and the fact that he would change the cast up with every volume or every storyline, and he would just do all kinds of fun little stories set in that era. I just thought it was great, and the artists that he always had with him were fantastic as well.
Yeah, so that's a good one because it's like an anthology.
Yeah,
and so it's not just with Why the Last Man or with Preacher; it's a core group of characters, and that they should have a finite story with. With Northlanders, it's more like a book of short stories that you would get. So that's a good choice. With Gotham Central, I think it's because it's an ensemble, and you can always change an ensemble.
I have two answers for books that I wish had gone on. Mm-hmm. And the first one goes back to my earlier days. It was one of Ed Brubaker's first series. It's called Dead Enders.
Ooh,
it got
good
canceled
one.
After a very short amount of issues because I think it just wasn't selling. But it was the first time I'd ever read Ed Brubaker, and it was this sort of neat. Sort of futuristic mod sci-fi dude on a scooter story. And it was a little, I don't know if it was post-apocalyptic, but
I love dude on a scooter stories.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good. And I remember that ending way too soon and just thinking, oh, that's too bad. And then another one is Joe Casey's Wildcats 3.0.
Oh, yes. So good.
Which really got cut in its prime. Wildcats 2.0 was great. They shifted a little bit and they went to 3.0 and then it actually got stranger. It was a real precursor to what Casey would be doing later, and I don't think it really fit in with what they were trying to do with Wildstorm, but it just kind of ended, and that was always kind of a bummer. I would have loved to see more of that. I think it would have gotten. I mean, it's already thought of as a thing that was really good that didn't end. Stuff that goes on too long. I think he mentioned Fables and Powers, and I think those are, to me, I tried to stick with Fables. I was like, no, it's still good, and it really like it came to the thing that he had thought was going to be the conclusion, and then he just kept going, and it was like, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah, there's things like Runaways that I wanted to work over time, and after Brian K. Vaughan left, and then they sort of went nowhere. But I like where they've ultimately ended up with Avengers Arena. I think we can agree that that's the most interesting that those characters have been since the beginning. Or since at least the middle. In a few years.
I think about that as a continuation of the Runaways. I think it's those characters.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's.
Here's a good example of the opposite. I think is thank goodness that they don't use Starman. They don't use Jack Knight for anything.
Oh yeah,
I think that would be wrong.
It's something that's like weirdly sacred at DC. Like not.
I think it's part of the contract, and that might be lore. That might not be true, but I think it was that no one else gets to write that character unless. Unless James Robinson has a say so. I might be wrong about that, but it was different days then when it came to sort of the creator role. They would never agree to that now.
Mm-hmm.
Powers is a different story. I don't think it got it just they couldn't put enough time into it. And it got so sparse that when they went it was like, let's get an issue out, and it changed for a little bit, and it lost a lot of that spark, because that was one of my real big super. Pat, you're a big Bendis guy, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, did you stick with Powers all the way through? I had to jump off.
I did. I stuck around, and actually, right now they've been kind of good with their scheduling right now, and the three issues have come out of the Bureau series, and it's good to see some characters together again. Like, you haven't seen Walker and Pilgrim together for a while. You kind of see them together again in this book. So it feels right, but there's still something different, and that's maybe because of all the problems getting the book out over the last few years. Mm-hmm. But it's still a good read.
Yeah, I mean, I go back every once in a while, but I kind of had to just stop. I was like, I've had it did what it was going to do for me and also for the creators involved, I think. Mm-hmm. But I kind of walked away and was like, we'll be fine.
Super cliche on this one, but Fell. I would love to see more Fell. It's probably more famous now for being a sidetracked project that never got continued. That and Desolation Jones. There's a lot of Warren Ellis things that it's like he's written these great pilots for things and then they never went to series.
There was a lot of pitches he wrote that never even got to published. I remember like they'd make announcements like this book is coming. Wow, Vikings never happened.
A while back. I think beginning of this year, Brian Wood put out a list of the different pitches that he did either for the big two or just, regular things or for Vertigo or whatever. And like, wow, these sound great. And those are always bittersweet to see because they're great ideas. But then that because he's talking about them this way on a blog post, they're never going to see the light of day, in a full produced comic. So.
Boss. Paul, you want to read the next one?
Sure. Alan from New Jersey says, I got a question about some history on the downfall and rebirth of the comic industry. What was the year and reason that caused the downfall of comics in the dismal 90s? Were there specific titles or events that had promise and failed miserably? And what year did they make a comeback again? And what helped bring back our golden era again to our industry? I'm collecting back issues and trades, and I wanted to see what books helped cause the boom that we are in now. Thanks. No, it's called a boom now.
This is not a question that can be answered as simply as it was asked, I think. And I don't mean to say that as like a put down or anything. But
let's talk about the scientific principle of emergence. Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay.
So that's a Radiolab question. No, it's the idea that, it's not just one thing. It's not just one tipping point. It's many things.
It also wasn't – you can't point to a comic – or a series or specific comics that did it. It was a method of, honestly, you need to read, if you want to know more about this, you should read Sean Howe's History of the Marvel Universe or The Untold Story of, I don't know what it's called. It's something about Marvel, but we've talked.
It's orange.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I read it on the Kindle. I don't know what the cover looks like. I don't, The Untold Story of the Marvel Universe, I think is it. Where like he talks about, it's basically like Marvel got sold a bunch of times and each person who bought it was further away from people who wanted to make comics. And so they were looking for different ways to extrapolate money from those properties. And when it turned out that they could make a lot of money selling extra copies of things, they had different covers, but the same insides, they went with it. And so you started people's, you know, speculation was like, well, these will all be worth money. And they started selling a lot of stuff that wasn't based on what was inside it, but this the idea to be worth money. And eventually if people realized, hey, well, that's not going to support us. And all of the infrastructure that had been built up around that crumbled when the sales dropped off. And so, and they had to basically rebuild Marvel Comics specifically from the ground up. And it's like, well, what caused it to come back was they started doing really good books again. And that's why the late 90s and the early 2000s are to me, they're like a golden age of they said to creators, all right, make these comic books really good.
Actually, forget everything Josh just said. I found it. It's came out in 1996. It's Leonard Nimoy's Primortals number 3. That's what killed the comics industry. I actually remember going to a baseball card shop and picking up Primortals. I don't know that I was actively reading other comic books at the time, but I picked up that. That's about aliens come and grab some dinosaurs and then put them on a ship and then take them to the future. And then they evolve into dinosaur people.
I never bought multiple copies of anything. But I wasn't reading during that time. I stopped reading before that all. Like, it was right as it was ramping up, but I got out. So I don't take any blame for that. Although I didn't buy any, so I guess that'd be a problem too.
Pat, did you experience that where you were reading comics when you were younger and then stopped at any point, or have you always?
I never stopped. You know, for good or ill, I just kept reading. And you know, and the thing about me is I always stuck around with the books that I always liked anyway. And the moment a book is becoming really bad or intolerable, I just drop it. You know, and I just come back later on and see if it gets any better.
So was there ever a point where there was a week and nothing was good and you were excited about none of those things? And
I don't think that's happened to me, no.
Okay.
There's always something out there that's good. There's always something new to discover. I mean, if there's nothing appealing from the books I normally buy, I venture out and see what else is out there and see maybe there's something more interesting that I could give give it a try.
Well, I mean, it's been a while since the week of September 1st, 1996, when Leonard's Primordials number 3 came out. So maybe you don't remember that, but I don't know.
So if you want to write in, you can send your emails to contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and leave your voicemails, ask your questions, and try to get them on the show. Let us know where you're from, and if you're leaving a voicemail, you know, make it short and snappy. That sounds awful. Just don't go on forever is what I'm saying, because that isn't going to make it. I'm saying this to help you. Oh, let's see. Paul, we got anything coming up?
There are other podcasts that exist out there, and we're responsible for some of those in addition to this one. And one of them is the Booksplode podcast coming up very soon. I'm going to wrangle Josh and some other people. We're going to talk about The Dark Knight Strikes Back, Strikes Again. Why do I never remember the name
of
this damn book?
You want to think of Empire Strikes Back, and you can't not.
So which is it? It's
again,
Dark Knight Strikes Again. Of the Clones. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about that. And then after that, I think we're going to be doing some non-superhero stuff. Just a little bit of variety, you know? If you have any suggestions for things that you'd like us to talk about, you can email me is probably the best way to do it. So paul@fanboy.com. And I've actually gotten some really good suggestions so far. So some of those we will be using. And then Mr. Loika, I don't know if it's like a coincidence that your podcast is called Loikamania. Did you found it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You created it. All right. You inherited it from another guy.
I think I'd be a really good fit for this.
Named Chris Foster. Is like, I really need someone to do Loikamania for me. I've been doing it for 6 months and I wasn't prepared for this. I bought the USB mic and everything. Go ahead, Pat. What's happening on Loikamania?
Coming up this week, I think by the time you guys hear this, you know, I have Brian Michael Bendis coming up. I have David Aja coming up and Dustin Weaver. And more fun stuff on the way. So, yeah, you could check it out at loikamania.com.
As many people as me and Josh have interviewed in the comics industry, I think Pat has spoken to more people than I've encountered as a pedestrian in my life. Like,
it's damning.
Okay. How many people have you interviewed, Pat?
I honestly have lost track.
Is there anyone left?
There's a few other people. It's kind of difficult to get a hold of some people from DC, which I'd like to have on. But you know, I kind of made my inroads towards getting some of them on because I met Alex over at DC for PR. So I might be, you know, I might be able to work some more creators that I've never had on before in the show.
He's a vegan.
Is he?
That's with just weird disdain. They have powers, Josh. They have special abilities.
Go to iFanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review and more in-depth comic book talk and all the important news and discussion topics. You can go to iFanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on Twitter.com/iFanboy and stay in touch on Facebook.com/iFanboy. And you can see the stuff that's coming out as it comes out in real time.
Sounded dirty for some reason.
Right?
You can email us at contact@fanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. Don't play around with those numbers. Bad things can happen to you. With any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc. And if you dig us, write us a review on iTunes. Or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to the podcast. Spread the iFanboy word. Okay. What's a good way to spread the iFanboy word? Sidewalk chalk.
I think that's a good idea. There was always, in my old neighborhood in New York, they would always write, they would have comedy nights, and it would be at the bottom of the subway stairs. You'd see it every time.
Sidewalk chalk at the Pentagon.
That's not...
That's what I'm saying.
But like on either side of it, right? Terror, terror! Just to make sure that someone sees it. No?
That's it for this week's show. My name is Paul.
I'm Pat.
And that is Josh. You're not... Terror, terror. Bye-bye.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.